Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday morning, August the 11th, 2021, 19 minutes past the hour. Kind of a rainy, overcast Wednesday morning here in Marion and humid. But we should all be used to that by now because it has been humid and rainy and kind of like this dark skied for most of the summer of 2021, certainly here in the Central Ohio area. Do want to remind everybody today, we've got First Ward City Councilman Kai Mead with us in hour number one. Coming up in hour number two today, we've got the amazing Kreskin, who's going to make a big prediction for us, and possibly at the end of the show today, we'll be joined by another guest. So lots of stuff to talk about. Now, at the end of yesterday's program, oh, and I should mention, by the way, Glenn Coble will be on with me today from 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and then A Progressive Life will be on today from 12:10 until 1 p.m., and then we have Offbeat News and Trivia with Nate Redman, 4:10 to 5 p.m., and the Trinity Baptist Church Sunday Sermon will air today, 6:10 to 7 p.m. on this station. Now, yesterday, we were going through a February 26th, 1965, Marion newspaper, to be exact, and we had one question left that we did not get the answer to. Now, there was a restaurant called Cook's on David Street in 1965 here in Marion. Now, the ad we saw in the Marion Star from 65 was an ad for an all-you-can-eat perch dinner. Now, there were some sides. I don't have the newspaper in front of me, but I think there were potatoes, coleslaw, all-you-can-eat perch. How much was an all-you-can-eat perch dinner at Cook's on David Street in 1965? If you think you know the answer at any time over the next 2 hours, give me a buzz. 740-383-9944, and we'll get you some tickets to Zumbezi Bay, the Columbus Zoo, the Wilds, or we'll see what else we have. But here in hour number one, we are going to turn our attention to First Ward City Councilman Kai Mead. Kai, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. So what's new in the city? What's new in your neck of the woods?
So in my neck of the woods, a couple things that we're working on is we've got a neighborhood association that we've worked on. You'll see them kind of spread out throughout the city eventually. Essentially, we're allowing neighbors to come together to talk about the things that they'd like to see changed in their neighborhood. You know, some of them involve something that the city government can do, and some of them could be as simple as a trunk or treat program. So that's what we've done, and we had our first meeting, and we had a pretty good turnout of about 35, 40 people. So I'm really looking forward to our next meeting, the first Wednesday of every month. And then other than that, the city has money coming to it from just all the stuff the federal government's been passing left and right. And so we're kind of, council members all have their own idea of how they'd like to spend the money. And we're not exactly at that stage yet as to where we're at, like, officially spending it. But I think what we're talking about, like, once we get the green light, what exactly do we want to put it towards?
Now, the mayor was on the last week of July. Now, this is ARPA money, correct?
Yes.
And the mayor had said at that point that the night before, he was on a Tuesday morning, that at a council meeting, that he suggested that some of this ARPA money be spent to hire a new police officer. And there was no discussion, there was no vote taken at that time, and he could not understand that. But he said the three Republican city council members were the ones who seemed to have a problem with what was going on, and possibly the two independents. So, because a vote wasn't taken, it really was not known. Now, that was the end of July. Now, what happened with that?
You know, I don't want to get my timeline mixed up, but I think in between now and then, we found out that the amount that we were getting was going to be smaller because they were going to be giving, I think, a bit more to, like, the townships surrounding the city, and that came out of essentially the money that the city was going to get. And then since then, You know, I'm not really sure. I think that we have a, we've got the votes to pass it to get another police officer on the streets. I think that's what a lot of people want. You know, they want to see extra police protection, more speed monitoring, and things like that. And so I wouldn't be too concerned by the fact that nothing was said in July, just because we're here in August, and we're just now getting the money put into, we're just now creating the fund to where we can spend the money. And when we do spend the money, it's got to be on specific things that the federal government says we can spend it on. Now, hopefully, we can spend that money on things we were already going to spend money on that year, and so we free up new dollars to spend on things that weren't necessarily approved by the by the federal government for those dollars.
Now, how much money did we end up getting?
It's going to be two installments of $1.8 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yep.
A lot of money.
And so everyone's got their ideas for what they'd like to see it spent on. You know, and we're also talking about this One Ohio deal that we don't know. We have no clue when the money would come, but it's essentially the, I don't know if it was just Ohio. I think it was, you know, a lot of Midwest states coming together, suing the pharmaceutical companies over the opioid epidemic. And we don't have a number on what it could be, but that could be a sizable chunk of change that comes to us every year for X number of years.
Now, how much would it cost to hire a police officer?
So right off the bat with salary and everything, you're probably looking at about $100,000, I think, once you cover in salary, benefits, and everything like that. But I will say that our police services and our fire services and all that are running overtime so much right now because of COVID and just different people getting COVID that we would probably be not breaking even, but not taking just the full hit of 100,000, or not using the full. It wouldn't be like we were just all of a sudden using 100,000 of that 1.8 on just a police officer, because we're already spending money on the overtime.
But doesn't this become a problem? I mean, yes, it's over $3 million at this point that will come in whole from the federal government. But when that money is gone, and it would take several years if this was just one police officer, but how do you pay them when that money's all gone?
Well, you know, that's one of the cons to using grant dollars on anything. That's why we don't like... That's why, as much as people will sometimes say, well, I would just find grants for this and grant for that. Grants really get you something for an X number of years. Probably most of the time it's like 3 to 5. And then the city's then on the hook. So we'll find, say, a cops grant or something like that allows us to hire on 3 to 4 new ones for 4 to 5 years. But it's not like we're trying to hire on 20 to 25 with a grant, because then 3 to 4 years later, the city's got to come up with millions of extra dollars that they didn't have beforehand. So I think with that, when we're talking about one officer, there's a lot of different things that, you know, can happen in between now and then that create more revenue. I think tax revenue is up this year compared to previous years, and then we're always looking for ways to save money in between now and then, and we've got a healthy carryover. And so when we're talking about one officer, it's not a grave concern as to, like, okay, what happens when that initial grant period is over.
So when we look at the mayor's suggestion of a police officer, which he said on this show, and I'm sure he said at council, now you say you have the votes to pass that. So does that mean there are people who, you know, will not vote for that?
Well, I guess let me be clear. I haven't said, like, hey, will you vote for this or will you not vote for this? I just think that Marion, being the community that it is, and just from my past experience with the council members, we're always looking to try to help out the police forces. And so I'd be surprised if politics got in the way of us hiring that officer.
The mayor said he felt it was going to be a political issue. Is it three Republicans now? Is it four Republicans or three? Two independents, three Democrats, right?
You have four Republicans.
Four Republicans, three Democrats, two independents.
Yes.
Okay. So would this be something that the four Republicans in unison... We haven't taken the vote yet, but is this what things have come to on city council?
You know, I like to hope not, because at the end of the day, we're not going to agree on everything. I mean, if we were going to agree on everything, we wouldn't have different letters next to our name. But if we can't agree on stuff like this, then what's the point? Because this is an easy issue where we could hire in. I mean, we can improve the safety of our neighborhoods. We can, you know, have an extra person out there going after after drug houses, after speeding, after things like that. And so, you know, I just, maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I think that we can get something like this done. I'm not saying that council has to agree on every issue. I always look to try to work with any council person, regardless of the letter next to their name. And, you know, and typically I feel like I've got a pretty good feel on whether or not we can, whether or not something's going to get across that, across the finish line for council. And I just, to me, this is like a pretty easy issue.
What are some of the other ideas with the ARPA money?
Well, I actually have a few. one of mine is getting speed humps, not the speed bumps, in the Fair Park region, and not just exclusive to Fair Park. Essentially, what we'd be doing is getting, if we can get council approval, is getting speed humps that we can, you know, put down for say a season or two, and then move them around as we need them as speeding complaints come. Obviously, I would like to have some remain in Fair Park, but. That way, we don't they're not getting in the way of snow plows in January, because you don't really need speed humps in January, because everything's a sheet of ice, or at least it is for half the month. So that's one of the big ones that I'd like to see done. And then there's just stuff that's kind of been tossed out there that I think would be good. I'd like to see improvement to our parks, because I think really what COVID taught us is, like, let's just get outside and do things, and it's a lot healthier. And so I'd like to see a little bit of money go towards our parks. And then one of the things that I kind of just thought of a couple days ago that I've been kind of mulling over is essentially what it is a revolving loan on improving our sidewalks. And so the typical person doesn't have $2,000 to fix their sidewalks. And if the city just turns around and says, hey, sidewalks are the homeowner's responsibility, in law, that's true. But people in Marion don't have the $2,000 for the most part to go shell out for a new sidewalk. And if you do meet that threshold, like, if you do have that money, I don't think that they're going to spend it on a sidewalk, necessarily, because that's, I mean, it's kind of a boring expense to spend $2,000 on. So essentially what it would do is, you know, for 4 to 5 years, you have $10, $15 added on to your sewer bill, or maybe a couple extra years longer than that, or depending on how you wanted to structure it. And then, and so instead of having to put that money up front, now you get to, you know, pay for it over time, and you still get to have nice sidewalks. And so you'd have an initial amount that sits in the revolving fund, say like $50,000 to $100,000, and then people, as they, you probably release 25 of it the first year, and then as people want their sidewalks fixed, they would be improved, and then just, it would just be placed on, say, like a sewer bill or something like that.
Interesting. Now, haven't there been some issues with the rec center over the years? Is it open at this point?
I'm not 100% sure. I wouldn't be sure. I think the rec center gets used frequently by, I can't remember what the program is off the top of my head. But I don't even know if the rec center is. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to answer you one way or the other.
Well, one thing I want to talk about, because it is the story of the month, the resurgence of COVID, mm-hmm. and the vaccination stories. As you said, seems like a lot of our emergency crews are being used for this. Now, explain that to people, because I think if it's not happening to people, they're not understanding that overtime is happening, and apparently they're being spread thin. Police and, what is it, medical police, yeah. Firefighters, because of COVID. So what's going on?
So I guess the best way to put it is, imagine if 5 officers happen to get COVID. All of a sudden, you now have 5 persons' hours that you're covering at 150% of the original rate, and that's not budgeted for. I mean, we don't budget to spend an extra $40,000 on overtime. And so, you know, incentivizing ways for people to kind of either be safe or, you know, get vaccinated or just anything like that. Because at the end of the day, it honestly doesn't even become a COVID issue per se. It becomes a money issue. Whereas you're just paying exorbitant amounts in overtime for our first responders. Plus, I'm sure these first responders do not want to have to, you know, don't want to constantly be, you know, asked to work overtime and things like that. So, you know, it's just about getting back to normal as fast as we can.
Are first responders coming down with COVID at this point?
I think there's a few. It's not a lot right now. I think it's more of an issue of it's just a continuous. It was continuous. There's always a couple. I can't remember what the exact number is right now, but I just know I was talking to our safety director just a couple days ago, and he was just talking about the exorbitant amounts we were spending on overtime because there people would just go out with COVID, and it happened. I think last year we ran into the same problem with our trash guys. It spread like wildfire through them, and then we were just paying overtime like crazy for them.
Isn't this herein lies the problem? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't one of the first groups offered the vaccine, first responders? And there were a lot of stories about first responders refusing to take the vaccine.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be people's decision on whether or not they want to be vaccinated. And I think that we know a lot more than we knew now. And when I say we, I mean like the public. We know a lot more than we did when it first kind of came out. I mean, because when it first came out, you had like Pfizer, you had Johnson & Johnson coming around, you had, I can't even remember all the names of them, but there's just a handful of different ones that you could get, and people were kind of, I think, skeptical as like, which one do I get? What are the side effects going to be like and things like that. Now we're a little bit farther into this, and so people have a good idea of, you know, what are the symptoms, what are the side effects. When I got vaccinated, I was sick for about 12 hours, roughly. I had a high fever, and then just like that, I got it, well, I'd say about a day. So I got it at about 3:30 p.m., and then my fever was completely gone by 11 a.m. the next day.
Now, we're learning, as we're getting close to, I believe Pfizer is the one that's close to being approved by the FDA, that the military, possibly, well, it looks like it's going to be mandatory vaccinations there. I believe Ohio Health is saying mandatory vaccinations. Would you be for, once the vaccine's approved by the FDA, that first responders be vaccinated?
You know, I haven't, in terms of like a mandatory way.
A mandatory, once it's approved by the FDA.
You know, I'd have to give it some thought. I think that there's other ways we can kind of get close to that number, that full number, whether it's through like an incentive program, or things like that. You know, when it comes to businesses and things like that, I think it's really, governments shouldn't be saying you can or cannot mandate the vaccine for a specific business, because every business is different. I think of like the door-to-door salesman from like the 50s who goes and tries to sell you whatever, and he knocks on the door. You would want that person to be vaccinated.
Well, and I think private business is a different bird than a city employee who may be coming into your house to help somebody who's on oxygen, an elderly person, a sick person, who I believe would probably make up the majority of the cases of these first responders.
I think, and he's going to kill me if I'm wrong, I think our fire chief basically just told him, like, go get the vaccine. And the fire chief has a lot more sway with those firefighters than I do. So in a way, you know, leadership in the ranks kind of covers it and makes it, I think, a lot easier on the city. I don't know the exact numbers for each department on what their vaccination rate is, but when you do have, you know, a fire chief that says that, it does make the job a lot easier, because if someone is coming into your home for, like, with a, you know, they show up in an ambulance, that person's probably not in the best health. And them catching COVID, for what some people might say, like, this was just like a flu for me, it was no big deal. For them, it might be completely different. I mean, we cannot look at this issue, to me, and I have no health background, but it seems like we cannot look at this issue as a blanket thing where we just talk about every single person the same. We have to recognize how it affects different people.
Politics being politics, and We do have a city council. Everybody in city council is up for re-election this coming November. So it's interesting in a way because in a county, in a city, where only, well, it's still under 38% are fully vaccinated. A little over 40 have taken the first shot percent. This might not be a politically smart move to say first responders have to be mandatorily vaccinated. Anybody has to be vaccinated by mandate of city government. What does that figure in? Unlike a place where it's over 50%.
Yeah, but I think if you truly believe that it's going to help, like with the example we talked about, where you know someone's on oxygen, they have an extremely weak immune system. You want the people going in there to not put them at risk one way or the other. But does that look like a mandate? I don't know. Or does it look like more of an incentive program where you say you get it done, there's a $100 bonus on a check or something like that? That's just me throwing something out there. I don't know, but I think that we just have to continue to push for them to get vaccinated and talk to the people who are, they run that operation and see what they think about it, because at the end of the day, they have more expertise in emergency services than I do.
Would you say at some point, if these numbers do not improve, and being that the vaccine is still free, it's still offered any place you'd want to get it, I don't even think there's appointments offered issued anymore. You just show up at these places. People were offered $100 by the health department a couple weeks ago to go get it done. School's starting. And we still, Vax-a-Million went on. The big lottery, and we're still under 50%, way under 50% in Marion County.
Yeah, a part of me wonders if it's just going to be one of those things that it takes the politics of it dying down before it becomes a more regular thing. Just because, unfortunately, it's become this thing that gets associated with like one political party compared to another, and I don't think that's how we should look at it one way or the other. I mean, like, I don't look at like if someone gets when you're a kid and you have to get your shots before you go to school, like, people aren't calling that the Republican or the Democrat shot. And I think that as time goes on, we'll kind of consider it just another shot that people get before they go, whether it has a booster, whether it doesn't. I think that it just has to have, unfortunately, it just needs time to cool down. Because right now people just associate it with, they associate the opinion they disagree with the political party that they disagree with as well.
One of the issues, though, we have right now because of this is we now have the Delta variant, which we're being told makes up more than 80% of the cases in Ohio right now. We're being told that the Delta variant is more contagious than the common cold or the flu. And there are no mask mandates. There are no 6 feet apart mandates anymore. People are going to go back to school 5 days a week in 5 school districts in this county. There are still first responders who are not vaccinated. The county sits at 37%, 37 point something percent vaccinated. Is this a worry? And our numbers are going up at the same time.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it is worrisome, but I think what kind of gets me is like we had this goal to get to vaccination, and it was like everyone get, just hunker down, this is going to suck, but we have to get to a vaccine, and now we've got to the vaccine, and people are just, if they're making the choice not to get vaccinated, that could be a lifetime decision where they decide not to. So if we shut down now, I don't know what the difference is in between now and say 5 years from now if another variant pops up or something like that, just because we do have that vaccine available. And so part of me wonders, if we have a vaccine, what is like the end goal? Like, what are we specifically waiting for by saying like, let's kind of like, go back to 6 feet apart, masks on? Is it like a permanent thing or something like that? Because I mean, we've got the vaccine, and you're always going to have that risk of variant, unfortunately. And so I don't know. Part of me wonders what the end goal is at this point, just because, again, the vaccine already exists.
Schools are a big part of our county and city. We have five school districts, as I said. Being a city councilman, Marion City Schools would be the only school district that would fall into your ward at this point. And they are under a fire right now. Back a couple weeks ago, before the outbreak happened, they said no masks, no mandate. We're going to go back 5 days a week. Last Wednesday, when the numbers started to go up, they said we're going to have to keep the mandate in place. Everybody's going to have to wear a mask, and that's what it's going to be when school starts on August the 16th. Well, yesterday we saw a protest at Marion City Schools by a Mr. Young, I believe is who started it, started a petition as well. His daughter suffers from anxiety, and he was upset because there was no, well, the county schools have not mandated masks yet. That's one thing. Number two, I guess a petition was not set out to poll people. Apparently other school districts did that. Marion City did not. And what do you think? We're seeing petitions. We're seeing protests. Of course, Columbus media loves that. They run down here because there was a protest at a city school yesterday. What do you make of this whole thing?
You know, it just feels like, you know, everyone is just so, like, ready to fight. Like, ready to fight with each other. I mean, we have, like, I have a political science background. I mean, and I just remember, like, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, politics were, like, this thing that, like, I would annoyingly talk to about with my friends, and they would be like, all right, let's talk about football or something like that. And, like, I remember, like, the 2012 election and watching that, and politics was this thing that got covered a certain part of the year or a certain year, and now it's, like, so many people are heavily invested in this idea of us versus them on every single issue, and it's got to be like one side versus the other on everything, and we're so hyper focused on where we disagree when most people that grew up in Marion County have extremely similar, and this is not just Marion County, this is everywhere, but most people in Marion County have extremely similar experiences in life and probably agree on 90% of the issues. And to me, politics, you know, politics and democracy are about figuring out what we all agree on is an issue and working to improve that, and spending, you know, a small amount of time on kind of tweaking the disagreements. But right now we're just in this phase where it's like, I would rather fight about every single thing than come together to try to get wins. Sometimes big wins, sometimes small wins, but, you know, everyone's just at each other's throats, and I think that that's just bad. I mean, it's bad government, it's bad politics. And the sooner that we can get to a state where, you know, we admit our differences with different elected officials and things like that, and there's some things that we'll just never agree on. But, I mean, there's plenty of things that you know, we can work on with the right people to get things done. From improving streets, that's not a Republican or Democrat issue, to cleaning up the neighborhood, that's not a Republican or Democrat issue. And the list goes on. But I think that, you know, right now people just have this idea that if I only have enough people who have the same letter next to their name as me, then all of my problems will be fixed. And that's not the case at all. I mean, Congress just passed, or the Senate just voted on a $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Democrats voted for it, Republicans voted for it. That's when you see actual improvement, is when both sides agree on something. What's the point if we're just going to constantly be at war with each other, arguing, calling names, saying that this person's, you know, just pure evil, this person's terrible, and, you know, you can't vote for this party because they're just, you know, the worst people ever, and both sides are just saying it back and forth. I mean, because if that's how we want to be, there's going to be times where, yes, you know, your side or your ideology has, you know, all kinds of political sway, all kinds of political power, but then there's going to be times where you don't. And so we have to have, in my opinion, we have to have have governments of people who are willing to work together, who are willing to, you know, work on the problems that we can't agree on that are problems.
Did Marion City Schools make the right choice here with the numbers going up, with vaccination rates being low, with, I believe, still 12 and under not allowed to get the vaccination, which make up a great population of certainly their elementary schools, to not to have a mask mandate. Was that a good idea?
You know, I'm not sure. I haven't been to the school board meeting or anything like that. I don't know if there's an end date involved with it.
I think Dr. Arusi on this show said until the numbers get down to a certain point.
Yeah, and so, you know, maybe it is the right decision if we're talking about saying, like, hey, let's do this for 30 days until the numbers aren't just climbing like crazy. But, you know, again, we've got the vaccine, or maybe it's the right decision to make until, you know, people under 12 can get the vaccine or something like that. But, you know, we have to be transparent with people, and we have to give them, like, clear end dates. Because I think that when people feel like things are never going to end, that's when the frustration really bubbles over.
Isn't the problem, though, here, and we've talked about this many times with Marion Public Health, we've talked about it with politicians, we've talked about it with people from Ohio Health. Isn't the issue, that would all be fine in most cases, that the vaccine's available, you can get it or not get it. But when we're talking about the Delta variant of the COVID-19 vaccine, which is more contagious than the common cold, which that comes from Dr. Vanderhoff in Columbus, Ohio, who works for their medical top medical guy in Ohio, when he says that it's more contagious than the common cold, if we don't have a mandate in school, and you say, well, yes, I want my child to wear the mask, and this person says, well, I don't want my child to wear the mask, and that child has COVID, and the other child gets sick because it's a contagious illness, how do you do that? How do you just say, well, do what you want to do?
Well, I think that when it comes to masks especially, if and I think everyone knows this, if you say do what you want to do for a bunch of fifth graders, none of them are going to wear a mask. I mean, none of them. I mean, the parent might send them in, and that kid's probably taking his mask off as soon as he gets there. So when we say that, it just means that there's not going to be masks. Yes.
So it had to be all or nothing.
I think that's what I'm guessing was the thought process behind Marion City Schools.
So do you think it should have been all, or do you think it should have been nothing?
I don't know. I mean, here's my thing. I think it's important for us to say what we know and what we don't know. And there's people who, you know, spend their entire life studying these types of things. They spend, like, from the moment they're 20 till they're 55, till they're 60, doing all they're doing is looking at infectious disease. All they're doing is looking at, you know, how do these things spread and things like that. I have a bachelor's degree in political science, and I'm in law school. I am not qualified or even close to qualified to make that kind of decision, and I think it should be left up to health professionals one way or the other, people who spend their life on, you know, discussing these types of things. Because other than that, I mean, what are we, like, we're arguing with people who, you know, have spent their entire life looking at these kinds of things, who, you know, had no clue, you know, who have no say in it whatsoever, have no skin in the game whatsoever. We can't be arguing from a perspective of, like, yes, I see your doctorate and, like, your 30 years of experience in the field, but I have my 4 YouTube videos I watched yesterday.
Well, absolutely, and I think most people feel that politicians shouldn't be making it, but we had Dr. McLeese, who's the medical director of Marion Public Health, on, who certainly is a medical professional, and he said, until these numbers go down because of the contagious nature of this, vaccinated or unvaccinated, everybody should be wearing a mask inside.
And you know, maybe that's something that we should look at. But I think at the end of the day, we've got to take everybody's we've got to take the state's medical position into account, like our local situation, things like that, and just try to follow the science best we can, with the idea that, you know, this is just an ever-changing thing.
Is this the problem with COVID, that normally we would call the doctor? This is a medical issue. We would call the doctor, we would consult the medical people. In Marion, it's Dr. McLeese. He's the medical director at Marion Public Health. Dr. Vanderhoff in Columbus is the chief medical I don't want to mispronounce his title, but he's the chief medical expert here in Ohio at this point. And they're telling people, they're warning people, they're saying this is what you need to do, but the politicians make the rules. And the politicians are saying, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, to a degree, we do, but at the same time, like, locally, there's very small areas of control. I mean, a lot of this is state power. Locally, there's not a whole lot of things to do. Or, like, a lot of this is, like Columbus would have a lot of sway compared to, like, a Marion on, like, what we can and can't do. And so, you know, I think to a degree
you can put a curfew in, mm-hmm. which I believe city council and the mayor can do. Mm-hmm. If you can put a curfew in, has anybody consulted the law director or the county prosecutor on what we can and cannot do a city?
You know, that would be a question for the commissioners and the mayor, just because he would that would just be their call more than city council's. But I think that, like, with a curfew and things like that, we have to be careful that we're not just, you know, doing things that maybe have a small rate of success compared to, you know, that are just going to tick a lot of people off one way or the other. Because, you know, all you see is when you have the curfew, you just see, like, the memes on Facebook of, oh, do I not get the coronavirus at 2 in the morning and things like that. So, you know, we just have to be careful with exactly what we're doing. And, you know, I think that a lot of the buck falls to, like, to these state-elected politicians who, you know, have constant access to these health professionals. And, you know, however you feel about this issue, there's not really a clear message coming out from anyone other than, like, the governor and you know, whether you agree with that or not, like, there's not really a message coming out of, like, the state house who has said they want more control over what's going on in Ohio public health, which is fine. But if you're going to do that, to me, then you have to start coming to the microphone more and saying, all right, here's what's going on. You can't ask for more responsibility, but then say, but I'm going to still stay as quiet as possible.
I think clearly the state house, though, does not want any closures. They do not want mask mandates. I think they fought Governor DeWine the entire time on this and have eventually now taken his power away to do such things without their approval as well. The governor, at this point, as of June 2nd, doesn't seem to feel that any mandates are necessary. So do you agree with the governor at this point?
You know, I think that I do, just because I think that, you know, at the end of the day, like, the vaccine is available for people to get, and I know that with the Delta variant, we do have an increased spread and things like that. It's not that I couldn't be convinced at the end of the day, one way or the other, but any time we put in a policy like that, there's got to be a clear end point. There's got to be a clear way for us to say, like, all right, here's why we're doing this until this point, until, say, like, someone might say, like, until the Delta variant, you know, slows down. But then it's like, okay, so do we do this every time a new variant pops up for the end of time? Because this has become such a political issue one way or the other. This is a pandemic born out of an election, and that's not to, and what I mean by that is to say that because it was going on at the same time as an election, people then just rooted themselves in one side or the other. So, at this, while I do say that I think that, like, once everything kind of, once time gets in between now and with these vaccinations, I think that rates will go up. For some people, I think that they just won't do it because it's become such a political issue.
With 7 minutes left, I want to change gears here quickly and talk about the auditor. The last time the mayor was on, the two new developments that we are aware of in the situation with the auditor is there was the issue with the $1.2 million being mispaid to the state instead of the IRS. The IRS has now levied fines for, I believe, the last quarter of 2019, would it have been?
Yeah, I think so. So you have quarter three, quarter four, and quarter one.
So the last quarter one has not been levied yet, or has it?
No. So we haven't gotten an email about it if it has. And so with each quarter, you have it's about a $65,000 fine. So, and then with quarter one, because it only took up about a month and a half, quarter one, it's about a $15,000 to $20,000 fine. So we're looking at like $150,000. Just about. And that's if the IRS says, you know, no, we are not changing the amount, no, we're not offering forgiveness and things like that. But, you know, part of me thinks, what's the point of a fine system? Like, why would the IRS be giving out these fines if they were constantly like, yeah, forget about it?
Well, and the other issue here, we learned recently that money that pays police officers, first responders' salaries, grants, were not being drawn down on. The city luckily noticed this, and that has been started again. The grants are being drawn down on. What's going on in the auditor's office?
You know, I think that very few people know. I think that it's just, like, we can't go 2 weeks. We can't go a month, I mean, really, without something new popping up left and right. And I get it. I know people think that this is just politics one way or the other. But we get along. Like, Democrats and Republicans on council get along pretty dang well. I mean, like, as much tension as it seems like there is, everybody's friendly towards each other. There's, you know, it's not this constant battle that, you know, I think some people try to make it to seem like it is. We disagree on some issues, and, you know, sometimes some candidates and some elected officials try to score their political points, and, you know, as gross as that is, sometimes, you know, it's just politics. People are going to do it one way or the other. But at the end of the day, if someone is costing the city thousands of dollars, you have to say something. Like people have to know about it one way or the other. I mean, because what's the alternative? The alternative is, like, we just say, like, oh, you know, $150,000 of your dollars, $150,000 of your tax dollars, you know, that's not a big deal. Let's not talk about it. That's a good old boys club. I mean, at what point do we say that that's? At what point do we say it's a problem? Would it have been $50,000, $100,000? Is your threshold $500,000? I mean, what is the what point? At what point do we say, like, enough is enough?
Talking about it, I don't think I don't know if people are finding a problem with that in the city, the citizens, but the problem is we talk about it, we know it's going on, we see continuous problems. $150,000 fine that has not been forgiven by the IRS, and we don't know any consequences.
Well, I think that, you know, there's some things that you can have a direct effect on, and there's some things that you can't. I think that the hope is that with continued, you know, focus on what's going on, then maybe if it is an issue of people just not caring, then maybe they kind of will step their game up, and these mistakes will happen less and less. But on the other side of things, we had an issue where in the office there was an attempt to hire someone to back up, we have a Yarger report that says, like, hey, for this position, you want to have these requirements, these things on your resume. The person that was attempted to be hired didn't meet either of the requirements. One of them was, I think was close on the education or had the education, but you wanted to have 5 years of experience. It was for an internal revenue, an internal investment auditor for the city. So you're really making sure that everything's going okay in the office. And which lately sounds like a very important position in the auditor's office. And there was an attempt to hire someone that did not meet those qualifications and wasn't particularly close one way or the other. And, you know, with public pressure, with someone pointing that out, they decided not to do it. And so I think that there are small victories, you know, that can be had to make sure that we try to have the office running as best that we can. Because at the end of the day, when that office is running poorly, everyone suffers.
If this $150,000 is not forgiven and the city has to pay this, should the auditor remain in that position?
I mean, I don't think... I'm unaware of anything that we could do, anything that could be done one way or the other. And I also think that as of now, it's important for people to have their say in an election. And to be honest, I think that if this is the pace that we're at, you know, we all came in 2019. The next election for that is in 2023. I cannot imagine someone being reelected if they're on pace to cost the city $300,000 by the time they're done.
Yeah, but you know, we look at Larry Householder, and we just look at what happened with Governor Cuomo. Now, not that these are similar issues, but Governor Cuomo had the ultimate decision on if he was going to leave or not. Either he resigned or he didn't. He was an elected official. He could have waited till the next election and said, well, if you don't like what I did, then you can vote me out. So, I don't, does anybody, it doesn't mean they're going to leave, but does anybody ever say, there's big trouble here, and we can't wait for a next election?
You know, I don't think that it's ever in the context of an election. I think it's more of just of what's happening with our dollars in the city, because that affects how we hire police officers. That affects how we do all kinds of vital things to the city. We don't get to spend willy-nilly and go into all kinds of debt. We have to have, I mean, there's, once the money's out, once the money's gone, the money's gone. And so we don't really look at it from a position of an election one way or the other. We look at it as to what the heck is happening to our money. And so when it comes to elections and things like that, I think, you know, people do think that, you know, if that it would be very tough if an elected official continues to lose the city money, it's going to be tough for that person to continue to represent the city in that position. But at the same, and I guess let me caveat that by saying I have no interest in running for city auditor. You could double the salary and I would not run for city auditor. I cannot think of a single thing that you could do to make me want to run for city auditor. So this is not a political thing where I'm just like trying to gear up to run for city auditor. I just think it's important that we talk about the things that are going on behind closed doors in the city of Marion so that, you know, people are aware. Because if we don't, then it's just going to be this weird blame game that's back and forth and no one can tell who's telling the truth one way or the other. And I think that's how you have true transparency in government. That's how you hold people accountable, is by talking about the good things and the bad things that happen in city government.
With 1 minute left, do you believe that the city auditor is competent?
No. You can't cost the city that much money and constantly have these things popping up. I mean, you could have a Marion Star subscription only to keep up with the things that are going on in that office. And you'd be because you'd run out of free articles.
So with 30 cents, I know this is a long ball to throw, but if you believe the city auditor is incompetent, your feeling also though is we just have to wait till the next election.
I don't know of any other process, and at the same time, regardless of what I feel, I think it's important for voters to have their say one way or the other.
It'll be an interesting time, for sure, and hopefully we get updates as things go along. Kai Mead, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure, and we're going to come back in 10 minutes with the amazing Kriskin. Big announcements there as well. Stay tuned.
Out for the chopper.
And now a few words from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Scott, you remember when Hillary Clinton came to Marion in 2016?
Yes, I do. I stood outside of the Harding Hotel in the rain waiting to get an interview that didn't happen.
You know why she chose the Harding Hotel to meet?
No, I don't.
Well, they used to have a hair salon in the lobby, and she could sure use it.
Here we go again. WWGH Radio.